Hey folks, welcome to Florida Uncut, the podcast all about the people behind the protection and connection of wild Florida. Today's episode is someone I've talked to before on a different podcast, and I want to give you a little background on Andrew before we dive into what he did that is helping to keep Florida protected and connected. Andrew is a former research associate at the Harvard Business School. He has tons of academic publications. He runs a PR agency. He's an author, award-winning author, which we'll talk about. And after all that, his grand idea to do to help Florida, pick up trash. That simple. And the reason was he kept going out in Biscayne Bay where he lives, and he kept seeing trash every time he went out. And frankly, he just got sick and tired of it and decided to do something. And you're like, great, you know, good for him. But no, this is not just him picking up trash. He is starting a movement where he lives. He is getting dozens of people to join him. He's picked up tens of thousands of pounds of trash, getting other people to also do that, creating almost clones of himself all over the state. And he's not doing it just to feel good. He's cleaning enough trash to deem certain islands and areas trash free. So the reason I wanted to talk to Andrew today is he's a normal guy, has a full-time job, has lots of responsibilities, lots of interests, yet he uses his free time to do something. As we learned from Tracy and Chad last episode, the worst thing you can do is nothing. And it doesn't have to be complicated. You don't have to write a best-selling book. You don't have to be a celebrity. You can start picking up trash and bring others with you. You never know where it's going to lead. Hopefully to the trash can, but after that, all right, folks, welcome to Florida Uncut. You heard a little of Andrew's story in the intro. And Andrew, I know I've talked to you on my other show, Adventure Sports Podcast, because I just love this idea. And that's a show all about people just doing adventures. So for that show, it was a little unique. But for this, Florida Uncut, you're like the heart and soul of the folks I'm trying to talk to. Welcome to Florida Uncut.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So last time we talked, you had picked up 12,000 pounds of trash out of the ocean. And believe it or not, I know we already mentioned this, but that was almost 3 years ago, man. And I cannot believe that. I felt like that was maybe a little over a year ago. And you've basically doubled that, the last numbers I saw. And so my first question, before we kind of dive into the backstory, how's the first 12,000 pounds differed from the second 12,000 pounds?
Yeah, so I'm up to, on my personal cleanups, I'm up to 23,125 pounds of trash. A lot has changed. So like, this is just me on my own and like cleanups that I lead, but I have lately been joining and helping lead many, many other organizations and individuals cleanups. So like, I don't even know how much trash I've picked up on those other cleanups, but it's like several thousand pounds additionally, but I'm only counting my own because I don't want to take away from their own because I'm not the organizers of those events.
Yeah.
But what has changed is that I have learned so much more. I know so much more about these environments than I did when I started off. I can almost get like a sense of what areas are most likely to have the highest amount of trash. There's certain hotspots that I've learned that just keep getting trashed over and over again that I return to. I've expanded the different environments that I work in. So, you know, the first 12,000 was basically just mangroves, like basically red mangrove swamps. But since then, I've been cleaning up hardwood hammocks, piney rocklands, the Everglades, including like, you know, sawgrass expanses, but also like way down south in Flamingo, the Coastal Prairie Trail. My friends and I walked the entire length of it, which was like 14 miles. And for those who know about the trail, they know that it is very difficult. It is a very tough trail, but we cleaned up the entire length of the trail, including, forgetting the name of the beach at the very end of it. But yeah, so like I've really, really expanded the areas that I've been cleaning up and honestly collaborating with many, many more people.
Why expand? Are you done cleaning up mangroves, or is it more getting more people involved requires going to different places?
Yeah, I'm definitely not done with the mangroves. Not at all. I love the mangroves. The mangroves are, that's my, I don't know, that's my happy place. That's the environment that I love and know the most. I've expanded to other areas because, well, people ask me to help them, to be honest. And I do love these other environments very, very much. I spend, now that it's cooling down, I'll spend a tremendous amount of time out in the Everglades, whether it's, Big Cypress, or down the Southern Glades, or Waxahachie, or Loxahatchee, or Picayune, or name your place. I'll be there. And they need love too. They need a lot of help. And if I can bring additional attention to these areas and my own expertise, I've been doing this for like 7 years now, and I know something about picking up trash. And if I can help these people and these groups that are doing these cleanups, I absolutely will.
And tell us, listeners, what you're not a full-time trash picker upper, right? Like that's not your
No.
job. So
No.
what do you do?
Yeah, for those listening, there's no money in picking up trash. No,
Unless
I don't make
you
any
find
money
a
from
bag
it.
of money, that's about
Yeah, which
it.
I've yet to find. I found a GoPro once. That was about it.
Oh, wow. I was gonna ask, like, what a value have you found? So yeah,
Yeah.
GoPro, holy cow.
Basically just a GoPro, out of those 11 tons of trash. But no, what I do for a living is two things. I work in public relations, so I have my own public relations firm called ARO Communications, and I'm an author. I wrote a book called The Miami Creation Myth, and it's been published now since March. It's doing well. I'm getting an award actually in LA next week, called the International Latino Book Award. So yeah, things are going well.
Tell us about your book real quick, The Miami Creation Myth. When this came out, and you were, first promoting it or first talking about it, I was like, it took me a second to wrap my head around the concept. And I'm like, this dude is so multifaceted and so interesting and is in so many worlds. I just thought it was another layer to Andrew Otazzo's story, just like the layer of onions is there's so much to you. So tell us quickly about the book.
Probably too many layers. I'm probably doing too many things. But the book is just like, the Greeks or the Romans, the Egyptians, basically any great civilization throughout time has had their own pantheon of gods and goddesses, their own myths and legends, and tell stories about themselves. So I basically did this, but for Miami. So in my book, there's a parallel universe that's literally just Miami-Dade County. At the Broward County border, there's like a giant chasm, and no one knows what's on the other side. And there are all these gods. It's humor, it's satire. There are all these gods running around doing crazy things. And the first half of the book is standalone myths, basically explaining how, this Miami-centric universe was created, and how did people come to it, and what's up with real estate, and all these different topics that are, very important to those who live in Miami-Dade County. And the second half of the book is called Cafecito Odyssey. So for anyone who hasn't had a Cuban coffee, go have one. You'll wake up immediately. But basically, these two hero twins have to travel to all the different kingdoms of Miami, which is, just stand-ins for the communities, and put together the constituent parts of Cafecito. And the book is written in all the languages and dialects of Miami. So, everything from Spanish, English, Portuguese, French, Haitian Creole, Jamaican Patois, Miccosukee. And actually, it actually dovetails into my environmental work because I have an entire chapter on the Everglades. And I go into all the different problems facing Everglades, everything from sea level rise to invasive species, to marine trash, to all these different aspects.
Filled with kind of creative ideas like that. But you're born and raised in Miami.
I was, yeah. Yep, I'm a native Miami.
And so there's just so much going on there. It's like its own world. You talk about the chasm between Miami-Dade County and the rest of Florida. That doesn't feel like mythology, honestly.
No, that's very, it might not be a physical chasm, but like psychologically, abso-freaking-lutely.
Yeah, I did. It's a little bit physical. There's a lot of just nothing in between
Yeah.
Miami, South Florida, and the rest of it. And so, yeah, that's hilarious. So, What I want to kind of jump back into, and I'll tell people like where to find the book, and it has great reviews and super creative. And I just love that that's also, those stories are also, you know, bouncing around in your head. But when did you start picking up trash? Why did that start? And why did it grow into kind of almost this unusually large superpower for you versus for the rest of us who, you know, maybe we do it when we're hiking, but it never goes beyond that, you know?
Well, I think I started picking up trash 7 years ago. I'm kind of losing track. It's about 7 years ago. And I live on this island called Key Biscayne, off the mainland of Miami. You know, I've been exploring these red mangrove forests basically since I was a teenager, and I fell in love with them. They're amazing. They're magical. You know, if your listeners aren't familiar with red mangrove forests, basically they're these trees that have big sweeping roots that are literally on the water, on the ocean. And as the tide comes in and goes out, they get submerged, or the roots get submerged. And it's an environment that because it's tidal, it's literally every second of every day it's changing. There's always something changing, whether it's different animals that are coming in and out. Of course, the tide's coming up or down. The sands shift. The vegetation shifts. It's constantly in motion. And they are a keystone habitat. So the majority of the reef fish that live or lived in our coral reefs, which are now bleached, the vast majority of them have their juvenile stages within the mangrove roots to protect them from predators. Likewise, many, 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 many of the birds that we have throughout Florida nest in the mangroves. So they're a very important rookery. Basically, it's like a, you know, absolutely vital ecosystem for our all sorts of different life here in Miami. But I would go into this habitat and I would, you know, seek, like many of your listeners do when they go into nature, right? They go out there to find peace, to like center yourself, to like get away from the insanity of living in the modern world. And I would go out there, and instead of finding that peace, I'd get angry. I'd be like much more upset than when I came in because it was so covered in trash. Like going back to the 1940s and before, just it looked like a landfill. It's not an exaggeration to say that everywhere you step there, you know, you stepped on a piece of trash. So you said I have a superpower, but I really, really don't. You know, there's nothing special. It's incredibly mundane what I do. And like literally anyone can do it. All I did was I started picking up trash methodically, just like, you know, foot by square foot, just going through the preserve called Bear Cut Preserve on the northern end of Key Biscayne and just picking it up over years, you know, and the trash just accumulated. Again, there's nothing special about it. Just you reach down, you pick up a piece of trash, and you reach down again, you get the next one. And the only thing special is that I just kept doing it. And over the years, yeah, I've collected, you know, over 11,000 tons. Oh, excuse me, 11 tons, not 11,000 tons. I hope I don't get to 11,000.
I hope you don't, because it's not there, not because you stopped.
Exactly.
Well, man, it is a superpower. Endurance is a superpower. And this is an endurance sport. And that's what I love. You know, you talk about it being mundane. And I'm like, the guy that writes the Miami creation myth, this insanely creative and wild and glamorous and crazy story, his favorite hobby is the most mundane you can think of, picking up trash. The dichotomy is hilarious. But, you know, you start picking up trash and you don't stop. Why not stop? You know, obviously, it probably seemed overwhelming. There must have been a point where you saw the impact or saw the positive effect to keep it going. Because if it was hopeless, you wouldn't keep doing it.
Right. So, you know, people often ask me, how can you keep doing this when the same area that you've cleaned up keeps getting trashed by, you know, additional marine debris all the time? And yeah, I've cleaned up the same stretches of coastline dozens of times. But the answer is because I don't think of it as like it is a Sisyphean task. Actually, I have two answers to that question. One, it is a Sisyphean task because, you know, the more you pick up, the more it shows up. Well, not directly correlated, but more will show up. And so I don't think of myself as like rolling this boulder up this hill that I'll never get to the top of. I think of, after 11 tons, there has to be something alive that wouldn't otherwise be alive, if I hadn't started my work. So there has to be some egret or manatee or sea turtle or even a crab. Something is alive out there because of my work, and that's enough. That's literally enough. Like if I could meet that animal, it would be awesome. It's not gonna happen, but that's enough to keep me going. So that's the first answer. The second answer is that this has never been just about picking up trash, ever. Like I'm not trying to this. I'll never solve this problem. The point is to continue doing this to bring more attention to this problem. That's why I'm on your show. That's why I speak to, middle and high schoolers and to college age students and graduate students and literally anyone who listens to me. Like I'm constantly out there, presenting about how important the mangroves are, but it's an opportunity. Like, okay, so you probably came across my work because either you read something that was published or you saw one of my videos. So that video is basically the entree for everybody else to get versed in the severity of this problem. And that's my opportunity to tell other people, hey, I need not just me, but everyone else working on this problem. We need for you to pressure your policymakers to make to basically address this at its source. So if we're just relying on coastal cleanups, on me picking up the mangroves, other people picking up other environments, we've lost, right? And if you go into a house and you see like a faucet running in the kitchen and just, filling up the sink and water spilling out into the rest of the house, the first thing you do is not grab a mop to try to pick up the water on the floor. The first thing you do is you go over and you turn the faucet off. And that's what we need. And I've been harping on this for years, is that people need to get involved politically and insist that their policymakers do something at a municipal and at a state level to stop the massive amount of trash ruining all sorts of different environments across the entire state.
Why do you think picking up trash has been the way that you express this need to get the word out there? Why do you think it just resonates with people? It seems like it, like you said before, it seems so mundane, but it does draw attention.
Because it just catches people's attention if they come across a video. Well, first of all, let me just start by saying that I never thought anybody would care. Never, ever in my wildest dreams that I think anyone would care about me picking up trash in a mangrove
That's
forest.
understandable.
Yeah, like I guess it's because it's just kind of very weird to see a video, whether on Twitter or Instagram or anywhere else, YouTube, of a guy in the middle of a swamp, like maybe knee deep in water, pulling out a mattress or like a battery, a car battery, or like whatever. So that catches people's attention and they're like, what is this guy up to? What is he doing? Beyond the videos, I've done many other things to try to bring more attention to this problem. In 2019, I walked the Miami Marathon with 35 pounds of mangrove trash strapped to my back, all 26 miles, and it was so painful. It sucked hardcore. But I did it to raise money for an incredible environmental organization called Miami Waterkeeper, and to literally take this problem out of the mangroves and expose as many of my neighbors to it as possible. And that was successful because I got a front page story in the Miami Herald. The next year, I recruited a team to pull a 135 pound mangrove trash cart shaped like a fish the entire length of the marathon. And we raised even more money for them. And next year, I'm going to be swimming 10 and a half miles around the circumference of Key Biscayne, this island that I've been working on for 7 or how many years, I don't even know, to raise funds and also to raise the visibility of this problem. So like I'm doing all these like different activations around my work to do that, to get like more mass media attention, as well as doing like the individual work of going to middle schools, going to high schools, and teaching the younger generations to care about this problem.
What is your ultimate goal with what you do? And does it have a name?
My ultimate goal is to never have to pick up trash anywhere in the environment again. Is to like just go into the mangroves, go into the Everglades without a trash bag, and just enjoy my time there and watch, you know, as a result, see life flourish more fully there than it has been. And in order to achieve that, what needs to happen is that there has to be a broad movement, an apolitical movement in a time where everything's political across the spectrum of people saying, this is important to us. You know, our legislated or our elected officials need to address this. Our governor, our mayors, our, you know, even up to the federal level, this needs to be addressed. And if it's not addressed, we're going to put people into office who will address it. That's how that's going to happen.
What have you learned about, because I'm not even sure I know the answer to this. What have you learned about how trash just affects the environment? You know, is it more than just being unsightly? I know. The answer is yes. What is details of that, like the negative effects that it's, you know, that it's causing?
That's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up so that we can go into the science of it. And, you know, if it's just ugly, who cares? Specifically, the problem is related to plastic pollution. So say you drop a water bottle into the ocean. It doesn't stay a whole water bottle for very long. It's going to be affected on a chemical level by the UV rays of the sun. And that's going to break down that piece of plastic over time. And it's going to turn what's called macroplastics, or large pieces of plastics, into microplastics, which are very small pieces of plastic. And that affects everything in the food chain. So, you know, think back to, you know, middle school earth science. Think of the food chain. At the very bottom, you have animals like zooplankton, which are tiny, literally microscopic. Like a little higher than that, you have like baitfish and worms and crabs and all these tiny little animals that mistake that plastic for food and they eat it. And that accumulates in their bodies. And then larger predators will eat those smaller prey animals. So you keep going up the food chain, you get to herring, you get to barracuda, you get to sharks, you get to the largest oceanic predators, you know, tuna, swordfish, whatever. And those animals have the highest concentration of plastic in their bodies. They're also animals that we like to eat. So then we ingest that plastic, those toxins. It's not just fish. So you have wading birds. So, you know, you egrets, herons, that, you know, they have long, skinny legs to allow them to wade through the shallows and dig around and pick up, you know, tiny little animals to eat. They also mistake that plastic for food and they eat it and they die. And same thing goes with pelicans. Same thing goes with all sorts of different birds. I can't tell you how many different bird carcasses I've seen with their stomachs just full of plastic, like batteries and lighters and just the worst things you can possibly imagine. Manatees, same thing. So they're, you know, the sea cows, they're grazing on seagrass beds, and all those microplastics accumulate at the bottom of the ocean floor. And as they're grazing through there, they're ingesting a tremendous amount of plastic and it fills up their stomachs and they die. Ditto whales. So we're seeing beach whales, you know, pop up all over the world, and they'll mistake this plastic for food, whether it's plastic bags or whatever else is floating in the ocean, and they'll ingest it, and they can't digest it because it's plastic, so they'll feel full, and they'll stop eating, and they starve to death, and they die, and they wash ashore. Ditto dolphins. So that's just, you know, that's on the more chemical level. The physical level, it does a tremendous amount of damage as well on a kinetic basis. So like I'm saying, like, for example, you have fishing line that's just get caught up between branches or between piers or struts in bridges, and birds are flying by and they'll literally get decapitated by it. Or you have netting that'll, you know, get wrapped up around a sea turtle or a dolphin or a seal or any marine mammal. It'll exhaust them. They can't hunt. They can't travel, they can't go up for air eventually, and they'll drown. So it's just, there's so many different ways that these different debris items cause tremendous amount of harm to animals in these environments. And that's without going into chemicals, because you can it depends on what kind of chemicals are being dumped, but you have benzene, you have mercury, you have all sorts of horrible, horrible chemicals being just left out in, either from runoff. So like it'll, you have like car oil or gasoline or whatever that accumulates on the street, or people dumping, their unwanted chemicals into a drain, or the runoff from herbicides and pesticides going into directly into the ocean. You have people that, like, you and I were just talking about this before the show started, that I found two full buckets of heavy diesel fuel out in the mangroves, just like open. And I have found, you friggin' name it, car coolant, or excuse me, engine coolant, entire car batteries, full of just horrible, horrible things. And all of that create, can cause cancer that can just straight up kill animals outright if they get, a high accumulation of it, or it can take its time and kill them over time. But it is truly terrible.
I was paddling the Myakka River recently, and my wife and I went we're going upstream, and this red, almost faint stream in the river was like right in the middle of the river. It looked like a chemical, and it got on my paddleboard, and it just smelled so strong. I'm like, that smells like transmission fluid or power steering fluid or something. And we got closer, farther and farther upstream, and you could see more and more of it. And it was a cork that had, fallen off this bridge that was right above us, got lodged in some trash and was just on its side,
Wow.
slowly leaking, its contents. It probably leaked a lot when it fell over, but, it was at a point
Yeah.
that it was just sitting there on its side. And man, I couldn't, I was a pain to get that off of all of the gear that it touched. And I just think any tree or any other thing it'd touch, it was impossible to get off. And so, if you're living in a high rise in Miami and you think, why should I care about some water bottles out in the ocean? Eventually, like you were saying, it makes its way up the food chain. It will affect animals, which will in turn affect our economy, because here in Florida, the environment is the economy.
Right.
And eventually it affects stuff like this, water quality. And that should sound off alarm bells for anybody, anywhere. If our water isn't healthy and if our food chain isn't healthy, our economy is not going to be doing well. And as
Absolutely.
we know here in Florida, that is such a big part of why we like our lifestyle here in Florida.
Yeah, anglers aren't gonna go, charter boats. People aren't gonna go. If there's no coral reef, if there's no animals out there, they're not going to go out there. Yeah, people aren't going to go out into the Everglades, if it's all dead.
People aren't going to be going to the beaches. People are going to be canceling their trips. People are not going to be traveling here. They're not going to want to be here. And everyone feels that effect then.
Absolutely. You brought up an excellent point. Red tide. It affects both coasts at the same time, and it just devastates local economies, like from, Tampa all the way around the state back up to Daytona or even higher. It's insane.
You've learned that's really good, because I'll be honest, if you asked me why are microplastics bad, I didn't know, I don't know the science if I was really pressed on it. And I don't know if a lot of people do. They just know it's not good, or they think it is. But knowing exactly why on a biological or a chemical level is really important, and that I need to do some more research there. But you mentioned not planning on people caring about this or paying attention, but the opposite has happened. Lots of people have, and lots of people have wanted to talk to you. L We're literally talking about it right now. You're on the show because of this. What has been some of the coolest effects of the work you've done that you didn't expect?
People ask me that question too, like, what have you changed? What's the case study for your success? And I tell them that I don't like to, like, claim credit for any sort of, like, positive changes for myself, because I'm just one person among so many others that are working on this problem. And I think collectively, we have definitely risen or we've grown the visibility of this problem. We've 10 years ago, nobody that I knew in Miami or elsewhere in Florida was really talking about marine pollution. It was just kind of something that, happened and people weren't really aware of it. But I've seen over the years more and more people getting involved, whether in a leadership position or from the scientific community or just regular people in the community that say, "Hey, I want to take a Saturday off and I want to go get waist deep in the Everglades or the mangroves and pick up trash," which is wild if you think about it. Like, who wants to do that? I've seen it grow much more than I ever expected it to. And again, that's not just my work, but that's this whole constellation of different organizations and people doing this work and related work around the environment. And I've also seen it be nonpartisan. Like, it doesn't matter if you're a Republican or Democrat or somewhere in between. So many people don't want their environment to be poisoned. They want their children and their grandchildren to be able to enjoy these areas, and they don't want wanton killing of, charismatic fauna around them. That's what I've noticed more than anything else. It's taking up much more people's bandwidth, and people really want to help. They really want to get involved.
What are the things that happen to an individual when you go and pick up trash? Not just the direct cause of getting trash out of the environment, but those secondary and even tertiary effects to the individual.
First and foremost, like, a lot of these environments, Floridians never even like have never been exposed to them, whether it's a mangrove forest or the Everglades. They've literally never been there, even if they're just a couple miles away. So there's like this sense of awe of like, whoa, this is gorgeous. I've never seen anything like this. I've never been exposed to anything like this. There are crabs, for instance, in the mangroves running around everywhere on all the trees. Man, they're literally called mangrove tree crabs. Yeah, they're everywhere. There's tons of birds that they never get to see. There's if the tide is up, then they're balloon fish or bait fish or herring or mangrove snapper, just swimming around their ankles. And they've never seen anything like it. So like there's this deep sense of awe that permeates into them. And then there's a sense of disgust that follows quickly after, because I take them to areas that need to be cleaned up and they're full of horrible trash. So they're like, how could this? And there's a sense also of like incredulity of how could this happen? Like, who would do this? Why would they trash these environments? But then also people, it's weird. Collecting trash in these environments is almost like addicting. Like it's like you get into a flow state. It's a very rote activity, but you can see the immediate impact of your work because, you turn around and you see the area behind you is all clean and the area in front of you is still dirty. And I feel like in a world and in an economy where like people are constantly doing work and they have no idea like what comes of it, like what's the why did I spend an entire week on this report? You don't see the actual product of that, but something as simple as being out there and actually seeing the impact that you're having on a local environment can be very edifying for these people.
It's almost like it becomes the framework for people to have these experiences outdoors, where otherwise they wouldn't go into a lot of these places unless they could see the trash in there and like, I need to go get that out.
Even if they see the trash, so like there's another thing that happens. So a lot of people grew up with this fear of these environments. So like a lot of people, specifically like in Miami, if you tell them, "Oh, let's go to the Everglades," they're like, "No, I'm gonna get eaten by an alligator or a crocodile." And then I inform them the like they want nothing to do with you. Like you're I've worked feet away from an alligator and the guy wanted nothing to do with me. He was just going about his business. I wasn't on the menu. And same thing with mangroves. So like they look like this scary, spooky place, that you can't go into without getting attacked by some, I don't know, nameless horror. But once you're in there, you realize, no, like as long as you're smart and you listen to me and you don't go off and do something dumb, you'll be safe. You're not going to get injured. You're not going to get attacked by something. You're going to run into a spider web, and you're probably going to get, stung by a mosquito or something, but that's fine. That can happen literally walking around your neighborhood. So it dispels some of that fear. And once that fear is gone, that allows people to fall in love with these environments. And that's what I want them to do. Because in order to care enough to like bother your whatever state official or whatever, you need to love this environment. You need to truly, truly love it, and you can't be afraid of it.
And to love it, you've got to experience it, and experience it. Sometimes you need a reason like this to kind of push past that fear.
Exactly.
Focus on the trash. Focus. How often do you have to get to hear that in your daily life? Focus on the trash. Florida's full of interesting stories, interesting people. We're all, you and I are both very attuned to maybe the perception that the outside world has of our state. Speaking of that, what's one of the most interesting or wild things you've ever found out there?
Man, name anything, and I have found it in the mangroves. Seriously.
Just anything, any
Yeah.
item possible.
So a VR headset, multiple convection ovens, microwave ovens, so many sets of like plates and dishes and like cast iron pans and mattresses, so many mattresses, sofas, car batteries, like I said, a tremendous amount of tires, basically anything from a demo job in a house. Like it looked like someone just literally did a demo job and dumped all the trash into the Everglades. There was a 200-pound dinghy I found one time just floating around. There was a side of a container ship from Louisiana that had been floating in the ocean for literally 12 years. And the reason why I know this is because it had like an inspection, like
Like a notice or something?
yeah, exactly. It was a notice saying like, oh, this has been inspected on such and such a date in whatever Louisiana. I was like, wow, this has been floating in the ocean for like literally a decade. An unexploded ordnance from World War II.
Holy cow.
Yep. During World War II, the German submarines torpedoed a bunch of oil tankers off Miami Beach. And so like you'll still see that oil, among the mangrove roots. What else? Man, like so much clothes, so much underwear, occasionally syringes. I found a 200-pound latex block, just a massive block of latex in the middle of the mangroves that I had to roll out of there, and luckily it floated so I could float it out. But yeah, just freaking name a thing, I have found it.
Any good, useful finds? Like, oh my gosh, I needed one of these.
No. Almost nothing, because the salt water absolutely destroys everything. It just eats everything away, with the one notable exception of that GoPro 7, which I still have.
These sunglasses, I know listeners can't see it, but these sunglasses I found in a spring recently,
Oh,
and
nice.
they're like really nice Oakleys. I did have to replace the
Wow.
lenses, but those were like $5 on Amazon. But that's it. But if that would have been salt water, man, half that, I mean, it would have been one, probably tossed around a lot more and just broken up, but
Yep.
covered in barnacles and just corroded beyond all recognition. So, man, that's super interesting. And so how about the Everglades? Now that you're moving on land, are you seeing kind of a shift, maybe away from marine focused equipment to like just general trash?
Yeah, so the Everglades is a very different story. It depends where you're picking up. So obviously in the mangroves, the majority of the trash that washes ashore literally comes from the ocean. So it comes from really the mainland. What'll happen is, somebody litters in pick an urban area, and when it rains, that trash goes directly into a grate or into just along the street. It just falls into the general water system or sewer system too, and that'll go directly into the bay or into the ocean because it's not filtered, and so that then it comes onto the mangroves. The Everglades is a different story. So If you're in a coastal area like the Coastal Prairie Trail, the trash you find there tends to be marine based as well as, campers that refuse to pack out their stuff. If you go like along basically the border of the Everglades, like the eastern border of the Everglades, what you find is a lot of dump sites,
Oh
illegal
man.
dumps. So people go out there, they don't want to pay a dump fee or they don't want to drive to the local dump. So they'll drop their furniture there, they'll drop their car tires, they'll drop their, whatever chemicals they don't want or whatever materials they don't want to dispose of, and they just leave it there and then drive away. So yeah, that's basically what you find out there.
Man, the people that do that. Just the other day in my town, there's a historic cemetery. Really old, like they don't bury anybody there anymore because it's like 150-year-old cemetery. And somebody dumped their truck on the headstones
You're kidding me.
right in the cemetery. Most of it's fenced off, but the one spot that isn't, they backed in, you can tell, and just pushed it all out and left. And I'm just like, and it was
Wow.
cleaned up almost immediately just because of the nature of the situation. But I'm just like, who is the person?
That's
Good
terrible.
Lord. And so that's unfortunate. That's really unfortunate. And probably it's probably stuff that's hard to dispose of that you need permits for, or you need to pay to dispose. So it's probably not just even easy stuff to clean up, you know? It's probably really difficult stuff to clean up out there in the
Yeah.
Everglades.
Yeah, I found like massive fields of car tires that had clearly been dumped there over a long period of time.
Jeez.
Luckily I contacted the county and they sent out a team out there to investigate it and to pick up the site. But yeah, I mean, it's humanity, right? So like there's a certain what I like to think of as small portion of the population that truly doesn't care and will go out and do these terrible things.
Definitely important to keep in mind. It's a small minority of people that, it makes a big splash when they do it, and that's great because it's the exception to the rule. So, speaking of that, and speaking of just literally the tons of trash that you see firsthand, all the stuff you get, your love of Florida and love of the Everglades and love of, the coastal regions, the mangrove forests. What gives you hope about the future of Florida? What anybody you see, any stories you hear, or any trends you're noticing?
It's mostly been people's reactions. It's mostly been seeing more and more people that, have their lives that, most people don't have the time to do what I do, to go out and to clean up these environments, because they have their daily concerns, which are more than enough, their family, making rent or paying a mortgage or your jobs. But seeing so many just normal, everyday people wanting to get involved and wanting to help, that has been a positive change that keeps me optimistic, as well as speaking with students, speaking to, you don't have to be a PhD to get this problem. Like you can be a 13-year-old kid, in middle school and get it and want to do something about it and be upset by it. So seeing their reactions as well, that's what keeps me optimistic.
Now, is there a place in Florida that stands out to you as far as, and if there is that place and you don't want to name it, that's fine too, but is there something?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. I can't possibly name just one. There's like a particular stretch of Big Cypress that's so, I mean, it's mind-blowingly beautiful. That switches from sawgrass to rocklands to open prairie to, I don't know, just palmetto. It's gorgeous. There's a particular section of mangroves that I'm not going to tell people where it is that has one of the few remaining old growth mangrove strands in that area. And it's incredible because there's one particular black mangrove there that has to be like at least 6 or 7 feet in diameter. It's massive. It's, well over 140, 50 years old. It's still alive, and like it's just open. So you when you see mature mangrove groves, it becomes way more open between the different trees, and it's just like this beautiful, beautiful stretch, and you're just walking through maybe like ankle deep water, and it's just amazing.
I'm not sure I've ever seen old growth mangroves.
Yeah, most of them are clear cut. And what you see now is like the equivalent of new growth. I think I'm gonna get the name of this trail wrong. Big Pine Key Trail in the Everglades. That's really beautiful. That goes through all sorts of different environments as well. Coastal Prairie is up there for me as well. It is tough. It is not an easy hike at all, especially when it's even slightly wet. But when you see the salt wort, just huge expanses of salt wort, which is this, very hardy shrub almost that's like maybe knee high, but it just it's bright green and it just goes on forever. It's just mind-blowingly beautiful. Yeah.
Something that I want to inspire people with this show to do is just to start doing something. And what I love about your story is you're not a full-time environmentalist or a full-time conservationist or policymaker or any of that. You are someone who loves Florida and wants to do something about the places they love within Florida. What's some advice you have for people to get involved, whether that's directly with you or on their own? And is that just simply picking up trash? Is that, I mean, I personally think that's one of the most effective things you can do, and it's simply one of the things most people can do. But what's your answer to that?
So there's stuff you can do in your own lives for sure. And there's also behavior you can model for your children and for your neighbors. Because if they see you doing it, then they're more likely to join. So very simple things like when you're outdoors, doesn't matter if you're at the beach, doesn't matter if you're hiking, doesn't matter where you are, you're boating on an island. Even if you didn't drop the trash, pick up the trash you see. Like I can't tell you how many like spoil islands I've come across in Biscayne Bay that are absolutely trashed. And sure, there might just be one or two boaters every weekend trashing it, but there are hundreds, if not thousands, of boaters who also go there who chose not to pick it up. So that's one thing they can do. But that's like almost like that's just the beginning of what I want people to do. More importantly, I want them to get involved politically. I want them to tell, whether it's their mayor or commissioner or state rep or state senator or whomever, this is important to me. I need you to fix this. And here's the crazy thing. So like people can get very cynical about politics, but your elected officials, your local elected officials, if they want to get reelected, which believe me, that is their primary concern, they will listen to their constituents' concerns. So even if, you're not able to meet directly with that policymaker, their staffer will inform them of what you told them. And you don't have to go and physically visit them. You can send them an email. You can, send them a good old letter in the mail. You can comment on their social media or DM them. There's myriad ways to communicate with them that this is important and you want their support.
I'm not well versed in this world, but I think, like you said, people do get pessimistic about politics pretty easily, but I think it you might be surprised by how few people are truly sharing their opinion about something and how open-minded and eager folks are to listen. I know with the limited amount of local government that I'm a part of, whoever shows up has a bigger share of voice than the people that don't. And there's not that many people that
Absolutely.
show up a lot of times for certain things. Now, is there a lot of people on social media name calling and bashing people? Yeah. So you might get lost in the crowd there. But if you write a letter or an email well thought out, presenting something or sharing a story or sharing an idea, you will probably be surprised more times than not by how well it is received and how much share of mind it actually does have in that person's thoughts, and they will consider it when making decisions. It's pretty interesting, actually.
Yep. Showing up is like half the battle. Absolutely.
Andrew, anything else you want to share about the joys and adventures of picking up thousands of pounds of trash?
I don't know. I feel like part of it is just an excuse to be outside in Florida and to go to like all these different environments that I love that, you know, I wouldn't otherwise go to.
That's cool.
I would say to your listeners, get outside. Like Florida has, I mean, it has everything you can possibly, everything except for mountains, you can imagine. Doesn't matter where you live in the state. It is gorgeous. It is beautiful. And you're just like maximum a couple of hours away, probably within an hour of some beautiful habitats.
And getting out there is definitely helping. That's definitely being involved because you're showing, you know, you're showing a need for this kind of land, a need for this kind of these places to exist. You're showing demand, and just using it is partially being involved. So, yeah, if you pick up trash, even freaking better, and then write a letter. Mm-hmm. Holy cow, you're top 1% involvement right there. So,
exactly,
Andrew, thank you so much again. And we'll have to make it a little sooner than 3 years next time we talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. Oh, and I meant to ask, can people, where would you want to point people for the things you do and pick up the book and whatnot? Anywhere specific?
Oh, for the book, if you happen to live in Miami, you can pick it up at Books and Books or Barnes & Noble. If you don't, you can get it on Amazon. It's called The Miami Creation Myth. Yeah, that's it. And if you want to like follow me and like see the work I do and get involved, people can follow me at Andrew Otazo, OTAZO, on Twitter or Instagram. Yeah, and thank you for having me. That's really important to get the word out.
Carve out some time this weekend to pick up a little trash while you're out in wild Florida, and you know, it might inspire others to do the same. You can learn more about Andrew and buy his book, Miami Creation Myth, at miamicreationmyth.com. All right, see you in a couple weeks.